Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing at 2 a.m. on Friday morning.
I hustled, so don't even whine.
I'm not whining.
Not yet, McMahon. We're getting there.
Special shout out to our producer, Jackson Agella, who had his wisdom teeth out today, yesterday, whatever, before he's gone to sleep. And is still producing this podcast.
Listen, we say on this pod, the greatest availability, our greatest ability is availability. And Jackson showing up on wisdom after getting his wisdom teeth out is the highest compliment we can give.
Yeah. I got up at 5 a.m. today and I'm not going to go to bed. I've got a flight in 3 hours. I'm not going to bed. And Bon Temps woke up in New York City, drove down here to Philadelphia where we are. And McMahon insulted Bon Temps on national television today.
You haven't even introduced anybody yet, and I got a damn theme song.
Joining us from Philadelphia is Tim Bon Temps.
Hello, Brian.
Joining us from Phoenix, where he just covered the end of the Suns season unceremoniously for a second consecutive year, is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. By the way, we need all the wisdom we can get on this podcast. I don't know why Jackson got rid of all those teeth.
You're right, we do. McMahon is so excited. He's so fired up on Temps.
You know why he's fired up? Because he's going home. I do know. That's why.
I do know that. Well, we'll talk about the Suns going home in a minute, but nobody is going home from Philadelphia today other than the Celtics to go play another game. Very fascinating game six for this series. The Celtics are a fascinating team. Bon Temps and I have covered all their playoff games the last 2 years. And all they do is lose home games where it looks like the sky is falling, and then they find a way to win on the road. This is the third time in the last 2 years they've won a road elimination game. Teams don't win three road elimination games in a decade, in 15 years, much less three in 12 months. And they hold Philly to 85 points.
None of those games are even in Phoenix, where it's easy to win road elimination games.
Apparently, you only have to work for a half. So, Bon Temps, this was a strange game right out of the gate. Joe Mazzulla changed the starting lineup. Why don't you break down how that played out?
The Boston Celtics last year went to the NBA Finals, nearly won a championship based around a lot of it, around a starting five of Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, and Robert Williams, a lineup that outscored teams by 24 points per 100 possessions. And this season, Robert Williams misses the first couple months with knee surgery, comes back. He basically just comes off the bench the entire season. They play that lineup a handful of minutes. It doesn't look very good when they play it. Did not see the court for 1 second in these playoffs. And then today rolls out in game six. And as he has the entire series, whenever Robert Williams has been on the court, good things have happened for the Celtics. He's plus 18 in this game. However, even as this game plays out, and Robert Williams ended up playing 28 minutes, still felt like Joe Mazzulla wanted to go back to playing small and not having Robert Williams on the court, and kept pulling him off the court to play small, which every time he did that resulted in the Sixers going back to what they did the past few games, which is getting whatever they wanted offensively against the Celtics. And ultimately, by the end of the game, Joe Mazzulla rode that lineup. They end up going on to win the game. And, you know, we're now going to a game seven after, you know, Jason Tatum went one for a billion and everything else that happened.
Yeah, so the thing about this was the Celtics were the second best defensive team in the league. I talked about this on the pod the other night last year in the playoffs. This year they were 10th. And so I kind of think that Joe Mazzulla was kind of browbeat into it. And the reason I say that is because I asked all of the players what they thought about the lineup change. And it was like a cavalcade. Al Horford, who benefited a lot because
I'll look it up.
A lot. They liked it. Okay. Al Horford was like, I was excited. I was so excited. Then he got asked another question, answered it, disposed of it, then looked back at me and kept talking about how excited he was. No, that's never, that never happens. A player goes back and says, hey, just in case you didn't know, I was excited. Marcus Smart said he was ecstatic. Marcus had a fascinating quote, and in Bontemps, you can say what you're going to say about it. I'm just going to read it verbatim. And you can say whatever you're going to say about it. Quote, I was ecstatic about it. Rob, that's what they call Robert Williams, is huge for us. And I was proud to have him on the court. He was proud, McMahon. He was proud to have him on the court. And that just goes to show you that Joe is learning just like all of us.
Oh,
I know he's been killed a lot. Rightfully so.
He said rightfully so.
Well, this is reading, again.
We're not done with the quote.
Okay, go on.
I know he's been killed a lot, rightfully so. He needs to make some adjustments, and he's did that, and that's all you can ask for. That is verbatim quote.
Now this I was sitting there when he said it. We need to stop. We need to stop because this we need to put a pin in this now. I've talked to other people who cover the Celtics. Everyone is in agreement on this. Marcus Smart uses the phrase rightfully so all the time. He throws it in like once every other sentence.
It's like his you know, or his.
Yes. Yes.
I got you.
He was.
All right. Okay. In
talking to several people who were there also to make sure I got the proper context on it, the consensus was he was trying to defend Joe Mazzulla.
Gotcha.
And trying to.
So what am I supposed to do about that when he quotes, when he says it like that on camera?
Again, I would say that what I would focus on is the lineup change. And what I would say is that Joe Mazzulla all season long has veered towards offensive choices, playing smaller, playing faster, getting more shooting on the court. By going to Robert Williams, that's a defense first choice. That's a non-shooting choice, right? So if we look at actions over words over the course of the season, as we do on the pod, I think it's fair to say that the team with Robert Williams is probably the single most beloved member of the Celtics. Everybody on the team loves him. Everybody wants him out there on the court. The fact that he is now out there playing more and starting, I would guess that is a combination of players pushing, front office pushing, others pushing, saying, hey, let's try this lineup that obliterated the league last year against the MVP of the league, who is in game five in particular, got whatever he wanted inside. And against James Harden, who got wherever he wanted inside.
Quote, Jaylen Brown, it made a tremendous, tremendous difference. And you could just see it. It don't take a professional eye to see the difference that Rob made.
That's interesting. So,
I'm just going to say to you, having seen these, we can forget about the rightfully so little thing. Although I put it in my story and now I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
He said it. We have the ability to explain with context on the pod. So we're just going to explain.
Right. Anyway,
Wendy, he said you're not an artful enough writer to explain with context. Jesus, Bontemps.
I guess so. I would just say that it was like, wow, these guys really, really wanted to play this lineup. And so that happened. So they came out and they were playing a lot of zone. Basically, after they scored, they would go to zone, although they would play it without if they weren't in transition.
Right.
And the Sixers started 1 of 11. And so one of the things that's been happening in this series is James Harden has been getting penetration. Jaylen Brown for a few games pressured him up the court, but he was getting in foul trouble. And so they said, okay, we're going to, instead of stopping him at the point of attack, we're just going to block the lane. And, you know, to be honest with you, this alignment, and you guys know, I don't proclaim to be a strategy guy. But it kind of makes sense because the Sixers start PJ Tucker. They play PJ Tucker a lot. And so that's easy to put Robert Williams on PJ Tucker and then just leave him.
Yeah, because he's free safety.
He did make a couple of threes tonight, but I think he was
He was 2 for 7 from three, which you will live with that. Totally. This is exactly why Robert Williams should have been on the court in the final moments of game 4 when they had Al Horford guarding PJ Tucker on the opposite side of the court. They should have had Al Horford guarding Embiid there, had PJ Tucker on the opposite side, or had Robert Williams on the opposite side to come over and help there. It's the exact same situation. And it did make a huge difference. I mean, look, in this game tonight, Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey combined to go 19 for 39. Not great. Scored 52 points between them. They were the two guys who generated offense. The rest of the Sixers put together were a combined 11 for 44.
What was James Harden?
Well, that's the big one.
Harden was 4 for 16.
James Harden, another late series stinker. That's he needs to bounce back in game 7. This one's going to really mark.
Well, this is the wild stat with James Harden in this series. The three victories in this series, James Harden is 37 for 61, shooting over 60% from the field. Mm-hmm. In the three losses in this series, he is a combined 9 for 44.
Yeah, again, awesome or awful. When he's awesome, they win.
In between.
When he's awful, they lose. Offense as a whole, like, yes, credit the Celtics, credit the lineup adjustment, credit them with putting a lineup on the floor that was dominant defensively all last season and you know, helped them make a finals run for some of this. But they were the Philadelphia 86ers tonight, and that's not an upgrade. 86 points in a home game 6 when you've got a chance to knock out the favorite, man.
And they missed a lot of open threes. Like this game was there for them to take, and they didn't take it.
8 of 34. Across the board.
Well, also, we've got to talk about a classic cojones factor performance by Jason Tatum. It's easy to but it's one thing to come through in the clutch when you've been cooking all game long, right? You're feeling good. This dude, what was he before the fourth quarter started? 1 of 912 or something?
Forget he when he started making the threes, when he made the four threes down the stretch, up until that point, he was 1 for 14 from the field. And that is a flattering representation of how bad he was in this game.
That's an accurate statement.
And then he absolutely took the game over in crunch time.
But so here's the thing.
And then after the game, I love what he said to Cassidy, and you guys might have the quote. In front of you, but like, go ahead, Wendy.
So let me just set the scene just real quick here. He's 1 of 14. He can't, there are times where he couldn't stand up, slipping. Like he fell down like over his own 2 feet, like 3 times in the first half. There was one point where he got isolated on George Niang. And like, he tried like three or four times to get by him. He couldn't get by George's Niang. It was a
really insulting the minivan there, Brian.
Well, listen, no,
he's not named the minivan because he's nimble.
Yeah. So, here's what I'm thinking. This guy got all NBA yesterday, and everywhere across, NBA media was reported. Yeah. Jason Tatum is now eligible for $318 million extension. And, I'm thinking, my God, they're going to go out and he's going to be, 3 for 17. And his teammates were all coming up to him and everything. But like, I don't know. I don't know if he wanted to hear it. By the way, the environment in this arena tonight, Tim, I thought it was absolutely spectacular.
It was awesome. But here's the thing. And you're right.
I'm not done.
He ain't done. And it's his podcast. Hush for a minute.
It is his podcast. Okay. That is true.
So after going 1 of 14, he makes 4 or 5 3-pointers down the stretch. He scores 16 points in the fourth quarter, going up against the double big lineup around the Celtics, Horford and Robert Williams down the stretch. The Sixers score 13 points. Tatum 16, Sixers 13 in the fourth quarter. Joel Embiid takes his last shot of the game, not his last make, takes his last shot with 4 minutes to go. Doesn't shoot again after that. Okay. Jason Tatum walks off the court and goes to Cassidy, and Cassidy asks, I don't remember how Cassidy asked the question, but she basically put it on a tee for him. You just had this great fourth quarter. And he goes, quote, I'm, comma, humbly, comma, one of the best basketball players in the world.
True.
And so after the game, I said to him, I go, Jason, this is going to be a post-game interview that will be remembered for some time. Would you like to talk a little bit about that? would you like to either pull back or go further into it? And he went further into it. And he said that I truly believe that. And, you know, it's easy to tell yourself that when you got 40 points. But I think it shows character when you can tell yourself that when you've only hit one shot and things aren't going your way.
Yeah. And
you gotta be this, you gotta be the same person, have the same morals.
It takes cojones. Interesting. Cojones is what it takes.
The same character up and down.
Doesn't waver.
Jason Tatum should be thanking Malcolm Brogdon and Derek White, and especially Marcus Smart, who was an excellent game. And he should be thanking the Philadelphia 76ers. Because, yes, he hit these shots down the stretch of the game. But the Sixers scored 3 points in the final 6 minutes. Their offense completely disintegrated. It wasn't even really anything the Celtics were doing on defense. They just weren't running anything. It was just kind of wander down and jack up a three. At the beginning of the fourth quarter, they had several chances to put the game away early. Tyrese Maxey took a ridiculous sidestep, step back three right off the bat that was nowhere near close. Like, Philadelphia had this game on a tee and just completely botched it in the fourth quarter. And after the game, the Sixers said all this, you know, they said it was a make or miss league. We missed shots. We're going to be good on Sunday. Like, they said all the right things. The mood actually was pretty good. You know, it was the kind of mood where you're in the locker room and you're thinking, well, this team's either going to come out and play great on Sunday, or they're going to get absolutely demolished and lose by 30. Cause they're just kind of like, yeah, we're in good shape after the way this ended. But it's just the crowd was incredible. The Sixers had it right there. And then, you know, the fact that their offense completely shut down for that whole fourth quarter, it gave Tatum the opportunity to make up for just what was a horrific first 42, 43, 44 minutes. And to his credit, he banged home those two threes in a row to put him up four. And, you know, the rest was history from there.
Well, as Jackson, with all his wisdom, just put in the group chat, clutch time scoring Tatum 9, Sixers 1.
The Sixers didn't make a field goal.
A-point singular.
So Jason Tatum committed a clear path foul with 5:57 to go in the fourth quarter. Tyrese Maxey hit 2 free throws. By the way, this is one of the worst officiated games in the history of the league. It was horrendous. This crew did a horrendous job for both teams the whole game. It was David Guthrie, Ed Malloy, and Curtis Blair. It was a horrendous game. David
Guthrie gave a terrible pool report the other day. I'm glad he had a crap game.
Well,
known as Ref Bay, right? Wasn't he Ref Bay in the bubble?
I've never heard this.
Jackson, look it up.
I will look this up later.
Get back to the Sixers.
Anyway, it was a very strange moment with this clear path foul where Joel Embiid took 2 free throws. Then they went and reviewed it, realized that Tyrese Maxey should have shot the free throws, then sent Tyrese Maxey to the free throw line where he had to shoot 2 free throws again to get the same 2 points.
You're missing a key element. There had been like 4 possessions.
Oh, that's right. The game had gone on from there then too. And then they went back and reviewed it. It was a complete debacle.
There was a clear path foul on Maxey. They reviewed that. Then they said, okay, it was a clear path foul. And Embiid shot free throws, made them both, reflected on the scoreboard. A bunch of stuff happens. Then they do another review. And I have to assume that when they did the other review and they got back on the horn with the replay center, they were like, hey, guys, last time we talked, after we said that was a clear path foul, you guys let Embiid go to the thing. This could potentially be a problem. So
why did Embiid?
I know we're going to have egg on our face, but let's go have Max.
That was the thing, McMahon. It was a correctable error because they had the wrong guy shoot the free throws. So they then sent the right guy to shoot the free throws. This was just a microcosm of how poorly the game
and Maxey
inflate that PPG.
Well, he just thought it was a technical. I think he just thought it was like technical fouls. But anyway,
he took his last field goal attempt to win.
With 4 minutes to go.
3:56, I think, is
how
the
does
exact.
That happen?
Well, again, their offense down. So this is what I was going to say. So Maxey takes these free throws. They're up 2, 5:57 to go. They scored 1 point on a Tyrese Maxey free throw, 1 for 2 at the line, for the next 5.5 minutes. They had a meaningless Jaden Springer jumper with 20 seconds to go, or bucket.
Yeah, that ruined all the stats.
That's the only other That's the only other points they scored in the final 6 minutes of the game.
And their 11 offense, straight shots.
And their offense was reprehensible.
I just don't understand how Embiid doesn't get a shot up. Well, he's that's the MVP of the league.
Well, that's the thing. Okay. Well, first off, it's because Doc Rivers has been extending his minutes little by little each game. And I don't know if it makes a difference at the end. The second thing is they were basically playing zone or effectively zone because Robert Williams was standing in there, whether it was actually the zone or not, effectively did it. And they couldn't get the ball into where they needed to get it. And they kept, they would drive in there, get all jumbled up, get stymied. And then they would throw the ball back out to Harden. Harden kept like three times, Harden had the ball thrown back out to him. And it was, he eventually just ran out of time. So I have to assume, Bontemps, that they're going to go with this lineup on Sunday. And if they advance, they might have to keep going with it. Even if Jordan Zimmer doesn't want to play.
Well, I mean, look, I've been waiting for them to play this lineup for months because it was the dominant lineup in the league last year. And they've just, you know, this entire season, they've basically gone away from the identity they had last year. And in some respects, I get it because like Derek White's really good. And if you're starting him, like he's a really good player. But, you know, this lineup was so good last year and just was utterly dominated for large stretches of time. When Robert Williams is on the court, he's one of the most fearsome shot blockers in the whole league, flying over from the weak side. It just makes sense to me that you would have him on the court a lot more. And if you have him coming off the bench, he can only really play 15 minutes or so, because if you're going to basically swap him out with Al Horford, now Horford's starting, one of your best players is then only playing 15 minutes a game. Tonight he played 28 and was plus 18. So I suspect this is, if they win game seven, I'm sure they'll start this lineup again. And if they win game seven, I suspect they're going to be starting it going forward too.
I do want to defend Embiid a little bit though. Nikola Jokic did not take a shot in the last 5 minutes and 15 seconds of the game tonight. Now, he did grab a rebound, his 10th.
Oh, well, there you go.
For a triple-double. Oh,
here we go. He's been waiting to see this.
With 4:57 remaining. His 10th rebound with 2:57 remaining when they were up. I'd have to look it up. I think they were up 97.
A trillion? Yeah. Well,
sir. Nikola Jokic does not care about any stats. He doesn't care about any awards. He doesn't even know where his MVP trophies are. Don't you know this?
I've heard. The man did average a 30-something point triple-double during this series.
Not bad.
And I'll say this. It didn't matter if DeAndre Ayton played tonight or not. Nope. He was kicking DeAndre Ayton's ass up and down the floor this whole series. But anyways.
All right, let's put a bow on this.
The only thing I was going to say about to go back to Embiid in the fourth quarter, he was 3-for-6 in the fourth quarter. The rest of the Sixers were 2-for-14.
Yeah.
It just, you know, they just – Harden took some terrible threes. Missed, you know, kept trying to drive in. He was complaining after the game that he's the most fouled player in the league on fouls that aren't called. And
Jaylen Brown after the game, by the way, said the refs did a great job tonight. They didn't call their flops. So
I love some good flop lobbying. We've got it on in LA and Golden State. It's great.
Right. By the way, it was not ref bay. It was foul bay. Foul bay.
Got it.
Just foul. Google it. You'll see it. to put a bow on this.
Like 48. I don't want to Google that.
Don't do that. To put a bow on this, the road teams are 4-2 in this series, which is very classic of
the Celtics series. Over the past 2 years are 9-9 in home games in the playoffs. Oh. 9-9.
And they have now won 3 consecutive road elimination games.
Yep, it's pretty good.
I think I did mention that earlier. All right, never mind. All right, McMahon. All right, so one more thing. I really thought that Joel was going to carry them home. 5-6 minutes ago, they had a small lead, maybe 2 points. The crowd was absolutely floating on air. They basically stood for the majority of the game.
They had a couple opportunities there where shots rimmed out. Like Joel, I think, had a jumper that rimmed out. They had a couple other shots that rimmed out. They had a chance to go up more than two. They didn't. And, you know, then Tatum started making threes.
And, I looked it up today. Sam Hinkie got hired 10 years ago tomorrow. They had the, or I guess today, they had the press conference on the 14th, but I think he got hired on May 12th. So 10 years, you know, the process is churning and they were building towards tonight. You know, I know it wasn't reached the finals, but they haven't been to the conference finals in over 20 years. And
well, and look, whoever wins this series is going to be a massive favorite too in the conference finals. Like they're playing, they're going to be up playing a significantly lower seeded team and it's all set up. It was all set up for them to do it and they didn't do it.
And Philly, who is not going to get game seven at home because they don't have home court. If Philly wins this series and if they'd have won tonight, they'd have had home court the next two rounds if they had made it that far.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
The NFL schedule comes out this week, and you can be there to catch all the action in person with Vivid Seats. Every sack, one-handed grab, and touchdown celebration can be experienced live. Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN, is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Download the app or visit vividseats.com today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Okay, McMahon, I want to give Denver credit.
Yeah.
Because Denver handled their business and they're very good.
But I sense a butt coming.
No, no butt.
I like big butts.
McMahon, it's time for him to get home. I am routinely impressed by Denver. I know that they have some flaws. Every team,
you never get to watch them. What are you impressed by? Looking at the box score in the morning?
I do watch them a little bit.
He's just trying to make up for the anti-Jokic campaign right now, McMahon.
Oh, okay.
Anti-Jokic. I have my bet.
You've been on that kick for a while. Go on.
By the way, did you see this story from their rookie Christian Brown about being fined?
$15,000 for like side parking in the owner's spot or some such.
Well, here's my favorite part of it. He told the story on a podcast. I don't know which podcast it was. I'm sorry. I can't give you credit. This is my favorite part of the story that came out today or yesterday. I think it was today. He apparently needed to run into the building real quick. And so this was at the beginning of the season or maybe even before the start of the season, you know, new rookie, just moved to Denver and there was nobody in the parking lot. Cause it was, you know, and so he pulled his car up real quick and pulled it like across three parking spots because it was empty. They happened to be the three parking spots assigned to Stan Kroenke, the owner of the team. So he says, I don't have any way to confirm it or not. He says he went in and he was only in there for 2 minutes. Let's say maybe it was longer than two, but let's agree that it wasn't that long. And the Nuggets caught him on video doing it. And said, that'll be $5,000 for each parking space that you parked across. So $15,000 fine. Oh, my God. He was later, plea bargain to $2,500. But still.
When the Kroenkes finally pay some luxury tax, they're going to get back as much of it as they can, regardless of
the I think they paid the tax this year.
That's what I'm saying. They had to find a damn rookie for parking wrong.
Well, listen, we got it. This was McMahon mentioned this earlier to shift back to the series. This is Nikola Jokic's stat line for the series: 34.5 points, 13.2 rebounds, 10.3 assists, a block and a steal a game. Shot 59% on 23 shots a game. Shot 44% from three. Shot 85% from the line. That is truly video game stuff.
He was incredible. I mean, the guy is an absolutely incredible player. You know, KD said tonight, like, not surprised, he's an all-time great. I mean, he is an all-time great basketball player who just had one of the most dominant series performances that I've ever seen. And, you know, the Suns, obviously, look, Chris Paul getting hurt. Michael Malone kind of said that he wasn't sure if that helped or hurt the Suns, essentially.
Well, that was interesting because Stephen A. has been riding that train this last week.
Yeah, but Aiden getting hurt again, I don't think that had any impact on tonight. I'm not going to sit here and cry about it. Jock Landale, I believe, is the only player on them. Yeah. Oh, Damian Lee in garbage time. But other than that, Jock Landale was the only guy on the team with a freaking positive plus minus. Look, Devin Booker had a great playoff run that ended with a massive dud. Like last season, 12 points, 4-13 shooting, a team worst minus 27 in 36 minutes.
Almost KD, like expecting him and KD to play 45 minutes a game and shoot 40 times a game every game is going to wear guys out.
And KD, by his standards, which obviously are historically high, but he really only had one good game in the series.
That's right.
You know, he had a great game four when him and Booker just put their capes on and carried a significantly less talented Suns team to a win. But those guys, in their wins, they combined for 86 and 72 points. So basically, if those guys didn't just light the world on fire, the Suns didn't have a chance. And, you know, Jokic was just unbelievable. Jamal Murray ended strong. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, but this was – like, forget the analysis. What we saw here was very similar to what we saw last year when the Mavericks came in here and kicked the Suns' ass in Game 7. It was a total no-show at home, get-your-ass-booed by the home crowd performance with your season on the line.
Well, and what do we think the fallout from that's going to be?
Well, as one scout said to me at halftime, some heads are going to roll for this one, and I think some heads might have rolled regardless. But listen. We can talk about a whole bunch of different people who might not be back here next year. I think it's pretty unlikely that DeAndre Ayton's back. I mean, it's not like that suddenly is materialized. Like, we've known that all year long. It's been this awkward, like, well, we're stuck with you now. You're stuck with us. We'll figure it out down the road. I think that I certainly would anticipate they aggressively shop Chris Paul before that June 28 deadline that would guarantee his salary from 15.8 to 30.8. I think it's pretty likely that Chris Paul is elsewhere next year. I think Monty Williams, like, I don't know. I don't know. And I don't know. KD did make a point of saying that he enjoys playing for Monty Williams today, even after this game. So I thought that
prior history. Very,
I did think that was interesting, because I think that Matt Ishbia and the people that he's bringing in, you know, I think after this, you have to consider, hey, is Monty Williams the coach we want moving forward? But if Kevin Durant says he is, and or if Devin Booker says he is, then I think he absolutely is. But again, look, two straight years, very similar. I mean, down to the same deficit at halftime, 30 freaking points. Very similar exits at home. New owner, I think.
This time, though, it was the other team that was sick.
Nah, whatever, man. And then, okay, they had injuries this year. Dude, I'm not trying to hear that.
Well, and I also think, in sort of typical fashion, we're now talking a lot about Phoenix and not about Denver, just because nobody talks about Denver. But
well, we will.
I said coming into the playoffs, Nikola Jokic had the most pressure on him of any guy in the league, because everything was lined up for these guys to make this kind of run. And you know what? This guy has delivered and then some.
Yes.
Like this series, the way he came out and played in this series, I thought Denver would win this series. We talked a bunch. I didn't like the depth of the Suns. A lot of people pick Phoenix to win the series, as Michael Malone, in his only Michael Malone fashion, can, went out of his way, I think, three or four times to say, oh, yeah, you know, all these people pick Phoenix to win. Like, you know, the Nuggets have walked around with a big chip on their shoulder for a lack of attention for a long time, and I get it. But Nikola Jokic in particular, and Denver as a whole, was really impressive in this series. Like you said, McMahon, the only games Phoenix won, it took superhuman performances from Kevin Durant and Devin Booker to squeak those games out. And I mean, look, you go into these conference finals, whether the Lakers win or the Warriors win that series, I think you have to look at this Denver team. It's the number one seed with Jokic playing like this as the favorite to get out of the West and make it to the finals. Yes.
Look, they are going to, if it's the Warriors, I think the Nuggets will light them up. The Lakers obviously are a better defense team, but the Nuggets are the best team in the West. They've been the best team in the West all season long. I think we also need to give Calvin Booth, who obviously was promoted to GM when Tim Connelly left for Minnesota, we got to give him credit for putting the finishing touches on a team that's like this team's got a legitimate chance to win a championship. Aside from the 4 seconds in a free agency signing of DNP Andre Jordan, but you think of you like that?
Find a way to get him back in.
Listen though, the trade for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, like that dude was awesome tonight, and you know he's not going to score. There was a playoff career high 21, but he's
and they extended his contract at a good number right after they traded.
For KCP, drafted Christian Brown, signed Bruce Brown. Those three guys have all been tremendous pieces for them.
And by the way, like these guys play perimeter defensive positions. Like these are the hardest guys to get.
They have surrounded Joker with guys who really, really fit well with him. Guys who don't need the ball a lot, but aren't minus offensive players. You know, they can shoot it. They can cut. Really good defenders. You know, Aaron Gordon, which obviously was a Tim Connelly move. That trade has been a great deal. Just fits well. Guys,
again, so is the extension. They traded for him and extended him at a number that is good.
And Joker, I mean, I don't understand. Like, I know he doesn't do a whole lot of media stuff. I don't understand why he's not considered like one of the most enjoyable players to watch. Like, this guy is ridiculously funny.
Well, I think he is. He's just in Denver, and people haven't gotten a chance to really see him. And that's part of why these playoffs are so important.
Including people in Denver because of their stupid TV deal.
No kidding. But that's why that's
another reason why Kroenke's got to find rookies for parking spots, because nobody watches his damn channel because it can't get on TV.
Well, that's why these playoffs are so important for them, though. Like, these guys win the conference finals, you know, go to the NBA finals. Nikola Jokic on the biggest stage playing like this, it's going to open a lot of people's eyes to this guy and get a chance to see just how good of a player he is.
He is an unstoppable
passer. I've never said that about a player before. You cannot stop his passing because he always has another option.
And then he's capable of scoring 53 on you. I tell you what, though. If one reason Philly not winning tonight, maybe they win game seven. Maybe we still get the Joker.
Well, Embiid versus Jokic would be pretty fun.
Well, it would, except for the fact that Embiid would miss three games in that series because he doesn't ever play in Denver.
That's true, but when they played in Philly, it was a heck of a show.
Listen, they'd have home court advantage in Philly, so maybe you'd only need to play four.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, Denver's just been, it's been awesome. They've been awesome. They've just been really, really, really impressive.
One of the things I like about Denver, they have seven good players. They have seven guys.
You're not counting Jeff Green?
I'm counting Jeff Green. Jeff Green, Bruce Brown.
You're not counting Christian Brown?
Well, I'm not ready to give him that as a rookie just yet.
I mean, he's been solidly in their playoff rotation, been really good. They got an eight-man playoff rotation.
He'll be their sixth man next year when Bruce Brown leaves for money.
All right, don't mess with my point here. My point is,
make it then.
Those seven guys, when you look at what they can do, the versatility that they have, the trust that they have in each other, their way that they mix, being able to defend, being able to shoot, the way that they've learned to play together. You know, like one of the things that we talk about on shows at ESPN when they come up with stuff to talk about, who are the best duos, you know? I'm telling you, when you watch Jamal Murray and Jokic run that two-man game,
awesome.
Like I don't know if I'd ever seen anybody who could run a two-man game better than Draymond and Steph, because just the way they do it, it's pretty impressive. It's pretty close.
Well, because I think it's arguably better
Joker
can score anywhere on the floor, and he's clearly the best passing big man ever, and maybe the best passer in the game right now, period. It's incredible.
And when they run that play where Murray will throw him a pass and then just do a straight give and go.
Yeah.
And somehow Jokic knows where he's going. I don't even know if he does. I just don't know if he just reads and reacts.
I'm telling you, sometimes Joker makes the pass. It's like a direction. Hey, go here.
You mentioned that the other day, and it reminded me, like, you know how, like, the great quarterbacks throw receivers open?
Yes, that's what, like, he does.
He does that all the time.
And also, I've talked about his ability to throw a diagonal pass.
Oh.
A low diagonal bounce pass. His ability to do that forwards and backwards.
He can make every pass from every angle.
Mm-hmm.
Partially because he has angles that aren't available to other passers because he's freaking 7 feet tall.
Right.
But just the precision, the creativity, and then, like, just as a pure scorer, the guy can score anywhere. And, like, his ability to be, obviously the guy's not explosive. Like, he barely ever dunks. But his ability to create or take so much contact and still finish. So, I mean, shot 63% from the floor this year. That is a stat that you see from guys who are basically pure finishers. And he's doing it on these, like, through contact, off balance, unorthodox floaters. And yeah, I mean, it's incredible.
The other thing is he kind of plays taller than he is because, yeah, he doesn't get off his feet that much. But when he shoots the ball straight up in the air.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, Dirk would have that, you know, when he would shoot it, he would, like, sort of have that angle where he would lean back.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where the only way you could defend it was come from behind him because you couldn't bother the shot. Jokic achieves that same thing without doing the more athletic move that Dirk would do because
although he does sometimes mix in that Sambor shuffle, which is basically the goofy footed version of that fadeaway. But to your point, he is lofting that ball up over defenders, over obviously a lot of times more athletic guys. And I thought Jock Landale was talking the day between games, and he gave a long answer when he was asked about Joker. But one line that really stood out to me was when he said he has a point guard's touch and a big man's body. I thought that pretty much summed up what a unique talent this guy is.
Yeah, I think it sums him up perfectly. And the other thing this series summed up, too, is that, you know, from the moment that the Suns made this Kevin Durant trade, there were a lot of people who just were like, well, the Suns are going to win. They have Kevin Booker. They have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. They've got all this talent. They're going to win. Doesn't matter that they showed up. Doesn't matter that they played six games with Kevin Durant. They're just going to roll into the playoffs and be fine. And this Denver Nuggets team is the epitome of a group that has spent years playing together. Knows exactly what they want to do, how they want to do it. They, beyond obviously Jokic and Murray, have unbelievable chemistry, but so do these other guys.
All right, Porter's gotten great at cutting.
Yeah, all these guys who
basically was a standstill, primarily spot up shooter, he's gotten great at recognizing, okay, when to cut, how to cut, how to, and you know, he's getting backdoor layups off of Joker. And you know, we talked about the really good additions they made this summer. But, you know, as you're saying, Von Timms, a lot of these guys have been playing with Joker for years, and every single guy who's in their rotation was in training camp with them. And, you know, KD mentioned how much of an advantage he thought the Nuggets had because of their continuity, which obviously the Suns, you know, had the opposite of that. I don't know what the opposite of continuity is, but it's some kind of word, cavalcade or some crap, something I have to look up.
Well, anyway, to get back to what I said about the rotation, the Celtics are generally regarded as the deepest team in the league. They sixth man of the year, Malcolm Brogdon.
I would say they just are the deepest team in the league.
Okay, but fine. I don't want to get into
seven guys tonight. Go on.
That's right. They played seven guys because when the cookie crumbles,
well, for some reason the coaches just decided Grant Williams is not any good.
That's interesting.
That's the thing that's not made any sense all season. He's just, even in the regular season, he just stopped playing Grant Williams for large stretches of the year, despite the fact that 40% three-point shooter can guard people.
Yeah, I think there are other coaches who'd like to have him, and so his summer will be interesting there.
Very interesting.
For sure. All right, before we go, I want to talk about the Lakers-Warriors series.
Top six roster. Do your little rub it in. Rub it in our face.
So
you said in the West, you should be saying, I told you it's top six in the league.
Listen, I felt pretty good about that take.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. This is setting up to be this game sick. I have no idea what's going to happen, but people are going to be in their feelings on this game, guys.
Oh, yeah.
People are going to be in their feelings on this game because I don't know what Anthony Davis is going to be like. I'll just make the assumption that he's going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're saying. I know the whole thing of 8 years in college, but no medical degree. But if you left the game after getting an elbow to the temple, but then you can, there's like never any concern about a concussion.
Here's the thing. I don't want to make any accusations. I just know this. Whenever you cover a game and a player gets hit in the head and they take him to the back, mm-hmm. you get an injury report. Mm-hmm. And the injury report is almost always the same thing. So-and-so is being evaluated for concussion.
Right.
They always say that. Sometimes it's a concussion and sometimes it's not. Sometimes the guy doesn't have a concussion and he's available to return. Sometimes they say he's being evaluated for concussion. He's done for the night. And they wouldn't even say the word concussion.
Right.
They wouldn't say what he's evaluated for. They wouldn't say anything. So I don't know what Anthony Davis is going to be. But I will just say, there's just so much skin in the game on this one. Oh boy. Yeah. And there's bitching back and forth about the officials that has been amping up. And this is going to be one of those games, I think, where it's just going to be every possession, I feel like, is going to have a little mini drama in it. And you know that the Warriors are just going to, you saw what they did in Sacramento. And now I don't think the way the Lakers are playing Steph, where they're really putting a lot of pressure on him and he's got to be on the ball for almost the whole game, at least all of the time he's in there. I'm not sure that the table is set for him to have another giant performance. That said, I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah. And, well, a lot of that comes down to AD, right? I mean, if AD is healthy and ready to go, then that might be the case, but whenever AD has been off the court in this series, even for just a couple of minutes, the Warriors have just been freight training to the rim with no resistance. So that, like, I think Steph, Draymond, everybody. So, I mean, that to me, like we've been saying, I mean, this just all comes down to AD's health. Like if he's even out there and not looking, if he's kind of like dealing with this thing and not playing great, I mean, they need him to be really good. Like that, he's just got to be a dominant force for them. I don't know. I don't see how they can win if he's not.
So the other thing I'm going to say is Klay Thompson. Now, everybody says game six, Klay. I always remember that game. He had 10 threes in Oklahoma City, game six, mm-hmm. 2016.
I'll certainly always remember that game.
Klay Thompson has a number of games on his resume where he's gone on the road and maybe not elimination games, but super high value road playoff games and gotten it done. I will give you two that just happened in the last 2 years. Game five at Sacramento this year had a big game. Game five in Memphis last year when they basically, and the Lakers got the leverage in that series. I think he had seven threes in that game, something like that. 2019 in the finals, the night that Durant tore his Achilles, the Warriors actually won. It's a closeout game opportunity for the Raptors. Yep. They were going to play it at home. It was pouring down rain outside, and our bosses at ESPN had set up all these cameras to capture the fans you know, dancing in Jurassic Park in the rain. And they were thinking there was going to be these iconic shots of celebrating a championship. You know, there was like 50,000 people on that street outside. Mm-hmm. And then you know what happened? Klay Thompson happened. I think again, he had a 6 or 7 threes in that game.
Klay Thompson rained on their parade, so to speak.
You're in the right profession there. So I will just say that while he's been inconsistent in this series, he's basically had one good game and 4 just okay games.
Oh, listen, he had one game that I saw somebody on TV yelling about his horrible shot selection. Horrible.
Well, that sure as heck was true in those situations.
I know, but I just want that same energy. Don't save it. Don't save it for the bright lights, baby.
Well,
bring it here.
Watch out for Klay is what I'm saying. Watch out for Klay.
Watch out for a Hall of Fame player. Breaking analysis here on the Move Collective.
He shot like 30% on threes ever since that game two.
If you want a hot take, tell us to watch out for Jordan Poole. Don't tell us to watch out for Rick and Klay Thompson.
I don't believe that. Jackson just gave us a number. Klay shoots 46% on his career in game sixes. But I'm not even so much
46% from three is what the stat. 46% from three in game six.
Sorry.
Yes.
I don't care so much about the fact that it's game six. I think he can thrive on the road because it's one thing if you play well game six at home. Obviously, the game at Oklahoma City was on the road. So
sure was.
What's he done on the road in this series, though?
Well, that is the interesting thing.
He hasn't played well on the road in this
series. The Warriors have never played well at Staples, ever. Like, if you look at Steph's career shooting numbers, they're bad there. Klay has always shot bad there. And, like, for most of the time they've been in the league, like, when they've been ascendant, the Lakers stunk. Like, it's not like they were playing the Kobe. I mean, Steph did some, but Klay basically never played those great Kobe teams. They were always near the bottom of the league. But, yeah, they've never shot the ball well there. So, we'll see. But, I mean, look, the Warriors – every time everybody's ready to count them out, they seem to find a way to rise back up from the dead again. And, you know, you've got the Lakers, you know, LeBron. I thought it was interesting in game five. It really felt like LeBron was trying to get that done and just didn't really have anybody coming with him. And, you know, he even said after that game five, like, we got to treat game six like we did in the last round when Memphis came in. We got to treat it like game seven and get this thing done. I think if LeBron is going to summon, I'm sure, whatever he's got in him for this game six, the Warriors look awfully tired at the end of that game four. Who knows what's going on with AD? Like, you got all the stuff about what's going to happen this summer on both, you know, on both sides. What are the Lakers doing for agency? Certainly what happens with all these Warriors, dynastic guys, Bob Myers, the players on the team, et cetera. It's crazy how much is, like you said before, Brian, like, people are going to be in their feelings about this game. And if there is a game seven, just because there's so much at stake for these teams and so much on the line, it's going to be pretty wild couple of days.
Klay averaged 12 points, says Jackson, in the two games last weekend.
On 32% shooting.
Not great.
Yeah, and you know, whenever he plays in LA, there's a special thing there. So
for sure,
I don't know.
His home arena growing up. Dad, you know, dad works for the Lakers, played for the Lakers, was a Kobe guy.
Yeah, for sure, he was Magic guy. He played next to Magic.
No, I'm talking about Klay was a Kobe guy growing up.
Oh, right, yeah.
By the time we pot again, the series is going to be over one way or the other. What's the outcome going to be?
I wish I knew how good Anthony Davis was going to look in game six. I'll tell you that. Because I just think he's so very important. I think he's the most important player in the playoffs. Maybe Jokic is kind of there, but
Jimmy certainly has a case for that. But AD, and we've talked about this, even with the offensive duds that he's had, like, and he's had a few mixed in, this dude has been so dominant defensively.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one goes, because if the Warriors lose, there's going to be a lot said and written.
Yeah.
After, you know, if the Warriors lose. And if the Warriors win game six, And this is what I'm talking about, being in the feelings. The 3-1 crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Is going to be exploding. And LeBron is actually a tremendous Game 7 player. He's one of the great Game 7 players in NBA history. He hasn't played.
He's a hell of a Game 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 player, but yes.
LeBron has, I think, won his last 5 Game 7s, I think.
Well, he won Game 7 in against Indiana. He won Game 7 against Boston. He won
Game 7 against Golden State.
Game 7 against Golden State.
Won Game 7 against San Antonio in the finals. Two game final Game 7 wins.
Beat Indiana once or twice in Game 7.
Twice.
Right. Is the last time he lost a Game 7 in 2008?
I believe
Paul
so.
Pierce.
When he scored 45. And multiple road Game 7 victories, which is like, that should count double. Now, look, we're starting to get to the point where the history of LeBron is not as important as the way he feels today with that foot. And he tweaked the other ankle in the third quarter in Game 5.
Yeah.
But it would be hard pressed to see the Lakers going up there.
Well, you have the inevitability of LeBron versus the inevitability of the Warriors, which sort of one of those has to lose out ultimately.
I have to say the stat that they're at now, 29 consecutive series with at least one road win.
Yeah, it's on the line, huh?
Is on the line. That's a big one. And the 19-0 in Western Conference playoff series under Steve Kerr.
Have not lost before the NBA Finals.
I mean, this is, again, in your feelings, baby. I mean, just incredible stuff on the line there, and the Nuggets are going to be waiting for whoever wins, and sure, with their popcorn.
Yeah, with like 6 days off because the series doesn't start till Tuesday.
Right. All the conference finals kind of got set today when the Celtics won.
League wants LeBron or Steph to be nice and rested.
Well, we want to have our TV dates lined up. That's what it is, really.
That's right. That's right. All right. I don't know if there's anything you want to say about the Knicks, Bontemps. I think that they're going to need to have a transcendent 3-point shooting game in Game 6 if they're going to win.
I think Jalen Brunson's awfully good at basketball. It seems like the kind of guy, you get a guy like that on your team, man.
You know, man, he'd be a really nice fit next to a guy like Luka, right? Can handle the ball, good spot up shooter, tough, can defend a little bit. You know, if only it had been like that. If only the Mavs had a guy like that. But no, I mean, look. The Knicks were 29% from three going into Game 5 in the playoffs, by far the worst of any team. The Heat, who were 27th in the league at three-point shooting during the regular season, have been, I think, the best or second-best three-point shooting team in the playoffs at making everything. That started to flip around in Game 5. Jimmy looked a little sluggish at times in Game 5. I think he only took like 12 shots.
He hasn't, in this series, the standard was
Well, he also sprained his ankle at the end of Game 1 and then just been working back from it ever since. But, you know, but you're right. Look, the formula for the Knicks in Game 6 is to hit a bunch of threes and, you know, have the Heat still come back to earth. I think Miami's going to win this Game 6, but if the Knicks can somehow win Game 6 and get a Game 7 at the Garden on Monday, that would be pretty fun. That place would be pretty juiced up. For that,
by the way, injury, Wendy,
yes, sir.
When we talked about the Suns, you asked me what I thought. You spent more time around this team this year than I did. Who do you think's gone?
Oh, I mean, I think they're missing two of their four best players, and so it was very clear they were not going to win this series, especially with Denver playing so well. I think the Suns they have to build out their roster, but I don't think they're in any sort of crisis, but. I think that I'm not sure that they got the most out of KD. And so,
well, you know who they haven't got the most out of? DeAndre Ayton, because they have completely they've completely mishandled that situation for over a year now.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're going to have my guess is they're going to have some discussions about what the plan is for KD going forward. And that could get interesting, I think, in the wake of the way this ended, because KD didn't have much time, obviously, but they didn't put him in the best position to succeed. What it did do is it poured gasoline on Devin Booker. He was awesome playing off KD, and I think KD was fine with it. I don't think he had any qualms about the way it was going, but the way that they operated with this team, and they were limited with their roster, but it's not an acceptable way to go out. So I think no matter what happens in Phoenix, there will be significant changes to the roster, potentially elsewhere in the offseason. So, when a coach loses two closeout games like that, back-to-back years, there's typically some angst, but I'm not there, so I don't know exactly. But
And when a new owner comes in, there's typically some significant turnover.
That's right. That's right. So, but I, seeing Booker and Durant, I think that they're a powerhouse. And so when you have those two, a lot of things are possible. Mm-hmm. And so I suspect that that's what you're going to see is some changes, when also think some players are going to want to be there because they look so good.
Well, you can look at being there
to play with those guys, and it is a market that's attractive, weather and lifestyle.
Well, and you could look across the way at Denver, right? Like in one off season, they added three significant players. Added KCP, added Bruce Brown, Christian Brown. Obviously, Phoenix has traded a bunch of picks, but they have the ability, like you said, McMahon, very attractive market. Guys love to play. Both Booker and Durant both have huge Q ratings around the league. Guys really like them. Guys respect them. I think guys will want to play with them. Like Phoenix should be able to get players. And if they do it right, they could have a much deeper roster next year. And if they do, then they're going to have a real chance because those two guys are awesome.
And as disappointing as this series was for DeAndre Ayton, and as awkward as this has been for the last couple of years with him, I do think there will be significant interest in him in the trade market this summer. He's a 24-year-old former number one overall pick who averaged 18 and 10 this year.
He's on the Fun Max. Always special.
Especially the pre-cap going up significantly over the next several years. Fun Max.
Okay. Thank you, McMahon, for getting your work done so we could do this. Thank you to Bontemps for all that you do, Timothy. And thank you to Jackson. I hope hope that Novocaine doesn't wear off anytime soon, but I'm sure it has. So thank you. Oh, one more thing. Parting note.
Oh.
With the conference final starting next week, we're going to have some changes to our podcast schedule. I don't exactly know what those are going to be just yet. I think we've got some things we're going to do, but I'm not ready to announce it. But we may not be on the Monday, Wednesday, Friday cadence that we've been on for most of the posts.
For most ready of the to announce it. Are you ready to tell me about it?
Jeez, I was waiting for this reaction because I knew you didn't know about this.
Why am I always the last one to find out?
Well,
because you're not here, that's why.
we're still working on it, but there's going to be some, it's not permanent, just it's going to be more content, more of the Hoop Collective that you love and adore.
More pods, not less pods. That's the yes, bottom line.
More pods with different stuff. But, listen, McMahon and Bontemps aren't going anywhere. All right. Thanks for listening, Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Jackson.
Adios, amigos.
Seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.